Today's Tuesday, December 13th, and we're here to bring you all the hottest news.
News as hot as a plasma stellarator.
But not as hot as the Note 7.
No, not that hot.
Oh, Lord. This week, we've only got one correction. Well, not really a correction even this week. It's just we had the photo that was censored by the algorithm of the girl in Vietnam who now lives in Canada. That had her clothes burned off from napalm, and we didn't mention that it was napalm is the reason she was naked, so some people pointed that out.
I don't even remember what we said, but some of you might be taking the find the correction game a little too seriously.
Very, very serious situation, but the point there was that the algorithm, you know, under normal circumstances, should that picture be censored? No, not because of the subject matter. I mean, it is what it is, war images. Anyway, we've done some stuff and there are videos on the channel and they're fun and awesome and interesting. But our first story today is that the UK is going to tell people to lie. They've run into this impossible situation that we've had in the US for a while.
Yeah. So in the US, ever since we've had all this spying power and, the warrantless wiretaps and stuff like that, we've had something called parallel construction. So that's where the spies figure out that you're up to something.
But, by invading your technology.
Yeah, but they're not allowed to use that in court because they weren't supposed to be spying on you. So they find out, for example, when the drugs are going to be in the car and where, and they pass it along to local law enforcement and tell them, don't tell them where you got this information. Do a random stop. And they get the drugs and they prosecute the case and they never talk about where they actually found out.
It was a random stop, and it's plausible, yeah, right. But the chances of that actually occurring are slim to none. That is, we mentioned that not for the political aspect, but because it is technology being used to subvert citizens. There are other means at law enforcement's disposal to do this other than just spy on everything.
Now, the UK, they're taking it even further.
Yes.
This new Snoopers Charter actually has provisions that prevent anybody from talking about anything that was found in the Snoopers Charter. So when this goes to court, not only are you not allowed to see the evidence, but no one's allowed to talk about the evidence.
You must lie about it, I guess. I mean, yeah. this is the Guardian. This is the Register. This is the Register. So it's like, but this is a problem that we had in the U.S. because you're not allowed to, you know, it's called the fruit of the poison tree, basically. And so you can't, It's not procedurally kosher. And I like the way that you guys across the pond have dealt with it head on to just be like, no, we're just going to straight up lie about it. And it's like, well, I guess that's better than what we're doing here in the U.S. with this parallel construction nonsense. I mean, I'd at least, you know, if my phone's lied on me, I'd really like to know what happened there.
But being able to face your accuser and see the evidence against you is a very important part of the legal system. And undermining that seems like a terrible idea.
Just a little bit. So not to be outdone, the U.S. has one-upped that even, and the Senate is passing a law to authorize the feds to spend $20 million supporting independent journalists. Independent journalists.
So this, when I first read about this, I was kind of worried it was going to be like a blacklist. But instead, they've gone the whitelist route. So they've got this, what's the name of the thing? It's got a great name. Countering Disinformation and Propaganda Act. So instead of getting rid of fake news, they're paying people to counter fake news. But more importantly, what they're doing is they're creating a slush fund to prop up the existing media and the narrative that they want and guarantee that they don't go off that narrative because then they won't get any money.
Yeah, it's like, if you want to be a part of this, if you want to drink from this spigot of money, you have to, you know, sort of toe the line here. And this is interesting because 90% of whatever fake news problem there is not because propaganda. It's because commercial interest in having your guys, like you, the audience's eyeballs on the fake news generates money. And it's really no more complicated than that. This is not some sinister plot with, you know, some, you know, bald feline stroking, you know, supervillain across the pond for us. It's really no more. It's like the almighty dollar. This is not, I mean, I'm sure that there's some small component of it that could be used opportunistically, but 90% of this is just the almighty dollar.
It's also interesting. We use the Daily Caller here, and I don't usually. I try to stay away from the Daily Caller because they're clickbait and they're very biased. But I couldn't find any of the and of course, yeah, we know, they're all lying to us. The mainstream media is no more trustworthy than anybody else. But it's usually better to use those sources because, you know, you don't get accused of fake news. They didn't seem to cover this. I couldn't find a story. It was Russia Today, Daily Caller, and then like all the sites from that Washington Post article.
Maybe by next week we'll have a follow up. But right now it's everything's just really sketchy. Other than your technology's being used to subvert you, and I don't really know what else we need to tell you about that.
Yeah, and there was a story about the CIA came out with this report, and it's secret. You're not allowed to see it, but they guarantee you that
Russia secret report.
Yeah, Russia is the reason that Trump was elected president. If not for them, he wouldn't be elected president. And this, we only include this, not, we don't want to get political, especially not where Trump is concerned, because Jesus Christ. But
they hacked our computers.
It's important. If you look at one day, they come out with a story. It's like, hey, we're going to use $20 million of your tax dollars to spread our propaganda. And then the next day, they come out with a story. It's like, look, it's the Russians. And it galvanizes the opinion of 52% of the country who were like, yeah, we were right all along, and gives them support for this thing.
Yeah. Yeah. This is, you know, blatant manipulation, we think, probably. But, you know, the number one target of this, of all of this, is the internet, because you can't, you know, with the consolidation and the globalization and commercialization, you know, you can control a handful of news sites and television stations and things like that. Not really control, but, you know, again, it's the almighty dollar here. It's not some sort of conspiracy. It's just the drive for profit. But citizen to citizen news, and it's like, hey, this is what a couple of yokels in backwater USA think about whatever. You know, that can catch on, as we've seen. That can catch on with fake news, like actually legit fake news, which is just, you know, some guy in Mongolia coming up with the craziest thing he can think of. Like, you wouldn't believe, there was a long-lost Kardashian that was in the Alps. Yeah, people will click on that. People will click on that, and it generates money.
And it's also interesting that the CIA, I remember when, after Bush was elected the second time, one of the big narratives was, Yeah, we know it was fishy. We know you all hate him, but we have to support the president. We can't undermine the authority of the president. You know, it's like two parents. It's like, how dare you tell him he can do that after I said he couldn't? And now the CIA is coming out and said, nope. He's totally in league with Russia.
I don't know. I saw a tweet from Pelosi, and it's insane.
Yeah, and it harkens back to the McCarthy era, where. Now we're accusing the president of being a secret communist. It's crazy.
You know, Australia has been oddly quiet during all of this. I think their politicians are cooking up something far worse than any of us can possibly imagine.
They're getting ready for that big end of year secret conference where they give out a door prize for the most dystopian achievement. And Australia's like, we got to get back in the running here, man. We got to get back in.
It'll be interesting to see what they come out with. But again, because the almighty dollar is involved here, we see web giants that are kind of on this as well. They want to filter out extremist content, which maybe, but how they're going to do it is with hashes, and they're cooperating on this. And so this is an interesting story and something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, it's always interesting when Google and Facebook collaborate, you know.
They can agree, ooh, this is not good. I don't know. They're, you know, file hashes and hashes on specific documents. Like, suppose that you have, you know, a terrorist manifesto or whatever, and you caught one of the terrorists before they did something. You know, searching infrastructure for that file hash, I mean, the infrastructure for that exists. That is happening today. And I don't know. It seems like that is the least awful invasion of privacy, maybe, of being able to search for that one specific hash, because it's like we've got, you know, a terrorist manifesto or we've got a terrorist plot, and we need to find anybody that is connected to this plot early on. But if that's posted to the public internet, it's like we want to find a copy of everybody who's downloaded the manifesto. That is decidedly different than people who might be in on a conspiracy. But, you know, just searching the file hash, that is pretty specific. It's not trawling. It is searching for a specific piece of information versus, let's find out whatever Danny has done that is wrong, or that we could twist around into being wrong, or that we can get on a random stop or whatever.
This technology actually began when Google was trying to find a way to allow its employees to censor child pornography without having to sit and look at child pornography all day, which that seems like a great use of it. But there is a danger here of reaching too far. You know, maybe the Ministry of Truth says this is a fake story, we need to get rid of it, and Google hashes the images or whatever that goes along with it and gets rid of those links.
And it's just gone.
Yeah, and it's, you know, just memory hold.
And think about, you know, think about the Aaron Schwartz thing. You know, Aaron Schwartz was all about publishing academic publications. The same thing could be applied to an infraction like that. You know, it's like, I've got this academic publication that's behind a paywall that I'd like to release on the public internet because the knowledge wants to be free or whatever. This exact same technology could stop that from happening. And I'm not sure, like, there's definitely a scale of which one is more important than the other. And I'm not sure that the technology should necessarily be applied in that scenario because, you know, before too long, you've basically got a lid on the internet and what types of information can be distributed.
And it's important to note that these are not the government. These are companies that are owned by somebody.
Chasing the almighty dollar.
They can do whatever they want.
Yep.
But we look back at now there's going to be a $20 million slush fund to reward them for that. Then the relationship becomes a little murkier and you have to question it.
Yay, technology. Woo. Mm. In other news, Microsoft and Qualcomm. Things are getting really interesting with Microsoft and Qualcomm. You guys may have already seen that Qualcomm is looking to bring x86 emulation to ARM. And in fact, there was a joint demo where Windows 10 was demonstrated, you know, running on a Qualcomm platform. I think they ran Photoshop as part of their demonstration with the Qualcomm Snapdragon processor. This is really interesting because when other companies have sort of gone down the x86 route, Intel has been there with its giant, you know, club of patents. And so I really wonder what Microsoft and Qualcomm have done in order to get around the intellectual property controls that Intel has on x86.
Yeah, and it's interesting that they did this with Windows RT, but they did sort of a bastardization of Windows in that case. And this time they haven't made that mistake. This time it's actual Windows 10, normal Windows 10 that's going to run on ARM.
So the whole patent situation is really interesting. Now, it is limited to 32-bit applications because AMD is the company that brought us 64-bit extensions, and I have a feeling that that's why. Microsoft and Qualcomm really in this demo did not get into the technical specifics of how they're doing this. The fact that it's 32-bit, I think, signals that this is probably something that's happening in software. Qualcomm may have set up their hardware to make it easy to translate from x86 to the, you know, the ARM platform. Transmeta, you know, everybody's forgotten about Transmeta probably by now, but they had the very long instruction word stuff to help with x86, low power x86 emulation. So this is a really, really interesting situation. Also, something else that no one has pointed out is that the fact that Microsoft does have Windows RT means that they could do something really interesting with their compiler. They could do something really interesting and say, I'm going to compile this binary, this Windows binary, the Windows team, and I'm going to compile it such that if it's running on an ARM platform, it'll execute this part of the binary, and if it's on x86, it'll execute on this part of the binary. So it's kind of like, you know, putting Windows RT and Windows x86 in the same binary or in the same version of Windows, so that if you're on an ARM platform, you're running on something that the compiler has optimized, for the ARM platform. So Windows Core and all of the Windows APIs and things like that that a program like Photoshop might call would already be optimized for ARM as a result of the compilation process from source rather than emulation. If Microsoft does that, then it's a whole different world in terms of performance. I mean, you're still going to be at the mercy for the actual program, Photoshop in this case, for whatever that, you know, they've compiled to run on x86, but having the whole system basically be ready to go for ARM, and then you take a little bit of a performance penalty for any x86 programs that you run, that is a world's better situation than having everything running through that x86 emulation layer on ARM. And so I suspect that that's what Microsoft has got up its sleeve, but this is an early tech demo, and Microsoft just doesn't have a good track record for being honest with their tech demos. The other aspect of that is, are we going to finally realize the future of people running their phones like a desktop computer? You know, we saw that at Computex in 2016, where you had a Windows phone, which is basically Windows RT, and sort of kind of not really. And, you know, you plug in your USB Type-C adapter, and then you get full HDMI, full USB, and you can use external peripherals. And you can run, you know, quote-unquote desktop Word, Windows RT desktop Word, on an external monitor from your phone. Well, if you've got a powerful enough Snapdragon processor, you can run x86 applications on your phone, run it in a desktop form factor. You know, is there a market for that? Is that something you guys would be interested in, carrying around a phone that you just dock and then all your stuff is there?
I think the Apple crowd could get behind that. You know, I mean, as long as it could be similar to the Surface Book, where some hardware is in the desktop, but the processor's in the phone. I think that could work.
Yeah, could be. Could be interesting.
Especially if, I don't know how much further we can go with miniaturization, but if you could get a really nice processor in your phone and have everything else you need in your desktop, that could work.
It might be interesting. I'm genuinely surprised that Apple x86 devices haven't implemented ARM, because the cost would be negligible, and Apple certainly got the margins to do it, so that you could easily run iPad apps, for example, you know, on the latest generation MacBook or something like that, or the iPad Pro can run x86 applications, you know, some combination thereof. I'm genuinely surprised Apple hasn't done that. Microsoft may beat Apple to the punch on that.
I don't think Apple's interested in expanding the functionality of its product. I think they want you to buy them all.
Buy everything.
Yeah.
It's like, we don't want to cannibalize our tablet market. It's like, exactly. Way to forward think there, Apple.
It's probably, you know, the iPhone department is, or the iPad department's like, hey, we want to do this. And the iPhone department's like, no. Or the MacBook department, you know, is, you're not doing that.
It's called the dongle book, I'll have you know. Yeah, I can imagine that meeting where it's like, we don't want dongles. We do want dongles. Okay, what if we could cannibalize the entire tablet market, so nobody has to buy a tablet anymore. And it's like, whoa, 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 whoa.
I'm sure that comes up.
Well, Michigan just passed a really interesting self-driving car law.
Yeah, they, for the most part, this is just setting it up so that you can test these things, and all the regulations are kind of relaxed in terms of...
Does there have to be a steering wheel?
Or pedals, or, you know, that kind of thing. But the really interesting part that I found here was the taxi part of it. They are totally going to be cool with self-driving taxis as soon as possible. And that goes toward the robot revolution and taking our jobs. Because taxis, I mean, taxi is a kind of job where you don't need a skill to do it other than driving. I mean, I'm not trying to say that taxi drivers don't get better at it and have a skill, but I'm saying if you have a license and time, you can drive a taxi and you can be employed.
As evidenced by Uber.
Yeah. And that's going away as soon as we get self-driving taxis.
We didn't include it, but I saw a story about there's like the Uber ride sharing thing, because Uber's API is open or something. There's a dating app now where it's just like self-driving dating. I'm not ready for this world. I'm not ready for this. this is not good.
They're going to have to monitor the back seats of those things. Cause do you want to use a self-driving Uber where the first date has just happened? No.
Oh Lord.
Maybe we could, we should start a company that makes like disposable, you know, like those toilet seat.
Yeah.
But it's for a whole back seat of a car.
Yeah, there's just a dispenser and you just rip it off.
That's good. We should start on that.
You heard it here first. We've got 364 days to patent it. So Apple is investing in China, but they're not investing in phones. They're investing in wind turbines.
China uses a lot of power. And a lot of that power goes toward manufacturing things for the rest of the world. And it's all coal powered.
And so Apple is like, well, let us help you out with that. Because coal, solar, wind, it's kind of an interesting thing.
I bet Trump's going to be real angry about this.
Does he have a golf course over there? Because you know, he's got a golf course in every little corner of the world. So he's going to be really pissed if there is a golf course. Because that's what happened before. See, that's the joke.
Yeah, they won't disclose how much they spent, but I'm sure it's quite a bit. And China is, outside of the cities, it's low population density, even with all those people, because it's so huge. So it makes sense to do wind power.
And in other news of some plasma hothead going off the deep end, The Wendelstein 7, they verified the magnetic field on the Wendelstein 7, which is it's sort of the first step toward actual, real, honest-to-God fusion, like net energy positive fusion. If you've never heard of the Wendelstein 7, it's a fun project that has been many, many years in the making, and it's just gone through a series of tests the last few years. Well, they got it put together, I guess, last year, and they've been doing tests with helium and then hydrogen. And this is the first time that they were actually able to demonstrate that the magnetic field configuration is exactly what they intended. Now, they previously tested with helium and hydrogen. Everything worked as expected there, but they hadn't directly measured the magnetic field that the stellarator was expected to have created until now. And that's what the picture was.
If you don't know what a stellarator is, it's plasma that is moving in a kind of a circle. It's not really a circle. It's this crazy three-dimensional shape. Yeah. It's impressive because they figured out the shape. So it's kind of like a racing line on a racetrack. The way it takes the turns in this crazy shape keeps the loop stable.
Yes.
And so you get fusion from this little NASCAR plasma moving around. I think, does it make left turns or right turns? That's important.
Just nothing but left turns. Now, this sets a, you know, there's another type of reactor that's similar, a similar type of stellarator that's a tokamak. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, reactor. And the magnetic constriction for that type of reactor was in two dimensions. And so this stellarator is the first stellarator, you know, at this scale that is creating a magnetic constriction in three dimensions. And the reason that's important is because a lot of the energy loss in the two-dimensional magnetic constriction reactor means that it was not net energy positive for the fusion reaction. In this case, this is it is just a model, but this magnetic model shows that it can produce a reaction that is net energy positive. Now, this is not a reactor for energy production. This is still just for study. You know, this is technically a scale model, but this... on the one hand, it shows that the fusion, magnetic fusion here on Earth, or proper actual real fusion here on Earth, is entirely possible and within the realm of, you know, science and possibilities today. But at the same time, we've had such incredible gains in renewables like solar. The energy and effort that went into this, I think, signals that this particular stellarator is maybe way ahead of its time. So that's good. Google, they're getting rid of Flash and Chrome once and for all. Well, not really getting rid of it, but replacing it.
Yeah, it's still technically there, but it'll never launch without you explicitly telling it to. So whenever possible, it's going to be HTML5, and it's never going to launch the Flash without you saying, yes, I understand that I'm going to be hacked as soon as I do this. Go ahead.
Yeah, people have been doing some really interesting things with Flash. I think it was like 6 of the 10 top vulnerabilities this year were all Adobe related, Adobe technology related, and Flash factored heavily in there pretty well. So yeah, Chrome, security reasons, you're going to have to click to activate Flash, which doesn't really seem like a bad thing in terms of stuff tracking you and that kind of thing. I mean, there was even one security vulnerability that was, you know, some of the ad networks have now switched to HTML5, and so it's not that that's more secure. It's just that the people have a different platform that they have to exploit. And one of the more clever HTML5 exploits that I saw was one that had a very little bit of JavaScript that read in an image, and the image had varying. It had an alpha transparent layer, and the alpha pixels for the alpha transparency layer actually encoded the malware. And so, of course, in all of the ad networks, that got by any of the filters that the ad networks were using, because the JavaScript was pretty innocuous. It was just read the image and do stuff with it. And so, you know, the bad stuff algorithms were like, oh, that seems legit. But the malicious payload was actually encoded in the image. So instead of having, you know, like 3 kilobytes of JavaScript that you have to work with in an HTML5 ad, you could stuff in, you know, 600 kilobytes of PNG, quote unquote, PNG data to read that in. So that was really interesting. The web is about to get a whole lot more and less secure.
Yeah, it's good in terms of security, but also don't get a false sense of security from it. Because when it comes to the arms race of malware versus security, malware is way ahead. So don't think that this is going to save you.
There's been a momentary setback because of the loss of Flash, but don't worry. There's tons of holes in JavaScript that they'll be able to exploit. Don't you worry.
Yeah.
It'll be fine. Corora 25 is out. This is based on Fedora, which I kind of like Fedora as being the balance between work and play. Fedora, it's not really a complaint, but in order to do fun stuff with Fedora, you need to add a bunch of third-party repositories. You know, it was big news when Fedora got native support for MP3 because it's, you know, that's a patented proprietary technology, Linux open source. So when you install Fedora, it doesn't, you know, stuff like that didn't used to work out of the box. You have to add third-party repositories and bring in more software. Well, Karora is designed to be more noob-friendly, and so you've probably heard about, you know, Mint with Cinnamon. Well, Cinnamon is available on Karora, as is GNOME 3.22 and Mate and XFCE and, you know, all sorts of fun stuff. So you can take a look at that. That's finally out. It's based on Fedora 25. Their update for Fedora 25 is there. It is 64-bit only, so you're not going to run it on older machines. I just thought it was worth a mention. If anybody out there is running it or if you want to experiment with it, let me know.
If you're trying to get some normies onto Linux, go with that instead of Fedora. Because as soon as they can't watch a video, they're going to give up.
Yeah, you'll have to walk through some setups for that, but it's going to be interesting. There's another, it's December 13th. If you haven't rebooted your machine in the last 7 days, your Linux machine, I've got bad news. You're going to have to reboot unless you're running OpenSUSE and you can live patch. And there's a fun music video to explain that. You can Google OpenSUSE uptime funk. And that will explain it to you. But there's another, this is the second one in as almost as many months, an old Linux kernel vulnerability that will let people do local root. This is not the same as the one we mentioned before. This is another new one. So, you know, 0 days since reboot. Again, how am I going to get this 600 days uptime? I don't understand.
This also affects Android, but I don't think it can be used remotely.
No, you have to have local access to the system.
So...
But, you know, WordPress vulnerability or, you know, whatever to be able to do that, I don't think that that's going to be really much of an issue, honestly. Yeah. So, patch your kernels. You heard it here. You probably already knew that if you were keeping up with that. But if not, you got a Linux box, you did any of the Linux stuff that we did before, you need to go update your machine. You got to reboot it. It's going to be good. It's going to be a whole nother wave of really bad things for the Internet of Things, because it's like all those manufacturers that were like, crap, we just barely figured out how to update it. We got to update it again. Damn. Yeah. They're just not going to, it's going to be bad, but a US think tank.
Yeah. Don't worry, because the American government's going to regulate the Internet of Things. And if we know one thing, government regulation fixes all problems. Lord. Always.
This is just really, 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 really nuts. You know, state level regulation. I mean, I guess, you know, I don't know. I don't know how I don't think that we've got the vocabulary to be able to do this yet.
No, I think if you took the entirety of the representatives from the entire country and sat them down in a room and gave them a piece of paper and a crayon and said, write down what the Internet of Things is, you might get two correct answers. Maybe.
Maybe we could do it. Maybe we could be the underwriters laboratories of level one could be the underwriters laboratories of Internet of Things devices, because we've got the technology, we've got the know-how. We need to hire Lewis Rossman and the EEV blog guy Dave, and all of us together could definitely be the underwriters laboratories of Internet of Things devices. It would be great. We probably need a couple security guys too. But we could definitely be the underwriters. But then, you know, we would have to approve things as the underwriters lab, and then devices would just stop coming out. Like, it would just be like, no manufacturer could get stuff through our gauntlet crazy.
Well, imagine how many Chinese devices you would be breaking down every
nope.
day. You could never get through the backlog. Would be soul crushing. I don't want that job.
No. Well, it would be kind of easy, because you could set up an automated test apparatus, and that's going to catch 75% of the types of IoT failures that would exist. So that would work for the first year or so. That would give us time to staff up. But I wonder what Underwriters Laboratories looks like now, because they basically do that for all consumer electronics devices. Maybe the UL could have a wing for this or something.
Well, I'll tell you what's going to happen is they're going to staff this regulation agency with lobbyists and no ex-employees of the companies that are willing to bid the highest, and they're gonna put everything through as long as it's that company.
Anybody know the history of how UL came to be? Is that how they came to be, or were they actually people that knew what they were doing? And I think Europe has got the CE, like the CE is their little group of people that do that, and from what I understand, they're competent. So I guess we'll need that for the Internet of Things devices. I don't know. And what do you do in a situation like this? So Fitbit's acquired Pebble. Pebble's going to be turned off.
Yeah, they're not going to support it. They're not going to keep making the product lines. The acquisition, they only wanted the people. They didn't care about the products. And Pebble was the biggest Kickstarter of all time, I believe.
Yeah.
So a lot of people put their faith and their money into this. And they got a high bid, and they were like, see you later.
And Fitbit's going to, I guess, turn them down or whatever. And Engadget has this article that the headline was that the acquisition risks alienating loyal users. I know a lot of people that actually picked up a Pebble, and they were really happy with their Pebble for what it does and the battery life and things like that. It had some different design goals than a lot of other smartwatches in terms of battery life and how the screen is and that sort of thing. It'll be interesting to see how this ultimately shakes out. They may pull a Google where they're like, oh, we're going to turn it off. And then there's enough user outrage. They're like, oh, did we say turn it off? We meant open source it so that you can keep doing stuff with it.
I don't know, because that wouldn't that be a direct competitor to their existing product line?
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah,
I don't think they'll do that.
They're not going to open source anything. You guys are screwed. Sorry. Kickstarter, it's what you get. Sorry.
Yeah.
I don't know. Everybody remember Magic Leap? It was the so amazing as to be unbelievable VR headset. Well, it turns out it was faked.
That was another Kickstarter. And these guys have gotten a huge, in the billions worth of venture capital. And it turns out they're completely behind schedule. They made a demo of a game. And they told everyone, now this is pretty common in the gaming world. I guess they thought, hey, if everybody else is doing it, they showed a game and it turned out it wasn't a game at all. It was completely created by another company that they hired just to make a video.
Well, that's what you do when you got $1.4 billion in funding. Yeah. I mean, that's clearly what you do. But then they had the press in to look at the current state of the art, and it was like wearing a refrigerator box on your head or something.
Yeah, it was no smaller than all other existing VR, and it wasn't even as impressive as far as augmented reality than the Microsoft HoloLens product.
Hmm.
So they've overpromised and failed to deliver anything.
So who were the investors again? It was Google, Andreessen Horowitz. I never pronounced that guy's right. It's the guy from Netscape from a long time ago. Man, that guy just can't catch a break with his Netscape fortune. Alibaba. I mean, it's just.
Yeah, they got a lot of money and they've
$1.4 billion.
Yeah,
it's done. And wrapping up the news, the last story of this week is if you've still got a Note 7, you might want to return it.
But Samsung, of course, is about to push an update that just kills them. They've had enough.
It doesn't kill it. It prevents it from charging. So eventually the battery will run out. I mean,
that's split some hairs. But Verizon has decided these aren't risky at all. They're not going to push that update. So if you have a Verizon Note 7, you can keep living on the edge.
I wonder if that'll come up in the... inevitably somebody's going to have the Note 7 from Verizon in their pocket and it's just going to burst into flames. And then there's going to be a lawsuit and then the lawyers are involved. And I wonder if that's going to be the argument on the opposing side. It's like, well, clearly, you know, your client used a dangerous phone anyway. I mean, it was banned on airplanes for Pete's sake. And then that the person who had the phone is probably going to respond is like, I just thought my phone was so awesome that they wouldn't let it on the plane because otherwise, it would keep my attention and keep me entertained. And, you know, they can't have that on a plane.
Well, it seems to me like Verizon, for that very reason, I mean, the argument's going to be, hey, Samsung tried to protect me from this. They knew what was going to happen, and you refused to take part in it. That seems like a slam dunk case.
There was an engineering report that came out on the Note 7 as well this week that talked a little bit about how they didn't give the battery enough room to move as the case bends and flexes, and so that wears the internal membranes in the battery, which is what causes the fires, because you got two different materials that are never supposed to touch that are separated by a thin layer, and that's what drives the electrons to move from one side to the other through the battery terminals. Well, they apparently, like, when you bend or oh, it's the boiler snake.
We got so close.
So close.
So close, but there's the boiler snake. Oh, he's loud. He's angry.
Well, that sound means that it's the end of the show.
It's like at the award ceremonies.
Yeah.
Oh, they're playing us off.
We'll see you guys on Thursday back with some random video. We're not really sure what yet. Or next week if you only watch the news. But you should watch the hardware videos. They're pretty cool. Like and subscribe. There's a little bell down there. You should hit the bell because otherwise Google might think that you're not interested in us.
Yeah, that's... we didn't cover that story because it's so...
We don't care.
Nebulous and so many different approaches to talking about it. Nobody really knows. But it seems like YouTube might be shaking off some subscribers on certain channels.
Who knows? We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.